I'm Jonna Kaplan.
And I'm Carrie Provost, and you're listening to Going Steady,
a podcast about exploring places in the land of steady habits and beyond.
We've had a few great changes since the last time we were talking. I've been a longtime fan of your blog, The Size of Connecticut, so I've been impatiently waiting for the renovations that you've promised, and those have happened. So could you talk a little bit about like what made you decide to go in this direction and like what kinds of things you've been doing?
Well, thank you. I've been impatiently waiting too. So now I can finally say that the blog has relaunched, thesizeofconnecticut.com. Yeah, it's pretty much similar to the previous iteration of the blog. It's just a little more, I would say, outward focused, more for readers looking for things to do in and around Connecticut, as opposed to being more focused entirely on my own obscure, nerdy pursuits. I hope to keep some of that alive, but just a bit more readable to a wider audience and a bit more spread out in terms of, you know, I cover travel, food and drink, outdoorsy stuff, and shopping, as well as occasionally trips beyond Connecticut.
Yeah. When did you start The Size of Connecticut?
Started in 2009.
Okay. Yeah. So the internet has changed a little bit since then.
Yes, quite a bit.
It's hard to know when you start a project, like where that's going to go. And I think we all started with like much smaller pictures and so forth. So you have to like figure out how to adapt. And it's such a huge undertaking to change things. So what were some of the recent posts that you've put up?
I started with, I think, about 9 posts up, and so far I'm doing 1 post per week. All the old posts are archived, by the way. If you go to the blog, you'll find the link to them. As far as new posts go, I've got some local road trips. So one in Litchfield County and one in the lower Connecticut River Valley. I've got some Massachusetts and Rhode Island trips. I've got some New York City travel tips and a couple posts about local organic farms / farm markets, and the one I know you were looking at about the cupcake.
Yeah, we'll get back to the cupcake in a sec. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but exploring Shelton, Connecticut.
Yeah, the new Shelton, more exciting than you think. That's not their slogan. Their slogan is like something about courage and faith, but their slogan could be more exciting than you think.
The courage to be Shelton, Connecticut.
It's neat. Somebody commented actually on the Instagram post that it's similar to New London, and it is, and I hadn't thought of that, and that's probably why I like it. It's got a lot of really pretty natural areas, and it's also got that kind of old industrial city vibe that hasn't been wiped away. Even though Shelton being in Fairfield County, it's got like a little bit of that luxury apartment complex thing spilling over, but it's got a lot of really cool history too.
So the cupcake, which got my attention because it's, I don't know how big it is on a phone when you look at it, but it's quite a large picture on the computer. And then I just couldn't stop thinking about cupcakes for a while.
Quite a large cupcake, actually. But
So that was one of the big changes I noticed. You hadn't had too much food or drink up on your Instagram previously and have been seeing more of that. So is that like that part of the outwardly facing?
Yeah, it's I was somewhat nervous to do that because I'm definitely not a food writer. I'm a travel writer who, you know, obviously needs to eat stuff sometimes. So I had no desire to compete with that whole market of like food Instagram and food writing and food blogging, because that's a huge industry. And I'm not, I guess, a foodie per se. Like, I'm not a food snob, and I also have certain allergies and restrictions. So I'm not one of those people that can eat like any trendy new thing. I'm pretty health conscious. So I just wanted to include food because it is such an integral part of travel to so many people. And we do have a lot of really good food here. And I wanted to present some options for people who maybe aren't going out to dinner every night or looking for food news and happenings, but who just want, whether it's like a healthy option or just a little coffee or a snack or a dessert or a treat, you know, that's not the focus of their trip probably, but that's like something they can appreciate about going to a different place.
So what are some of the things that you've been encountering in Connecticut that you think we do well?
I think, well, we've talked about wineries before.
Right.
I think we do that well.
So we are counting wine as a food.
I'm counting wine as a food. Okay,
good. I'm glad we cleared that up.
I just saw a tweet that whatever the company, Kellogg or whoever it is releasing a combo box set of on one side Cheez-Its and on the other side wine.
That's for your Friday night, yeah.
That's not Connecticut related, but I like that. I've written about rural ice cream stands before. Mm. I think we do that really well. Pizza, we do really well. And I'm not a huge pizza eater, but like New Haven pizza is just the best. We do seafood, obviously. And I don't eat. I'm like, I'm going to get kicked out of the state. I don't eat like lobster. So, you know, yeah. I can't comment on the lobster rolls, but I believe everyone who says that they're the best, you know. New London often just kind of smells randomly like fish and chips. So we definitely have the seafood thing going. We're doing like coffee shops at the moment, I feel like, are springing up everywhere, lots of new ones, mostly in the Hartford area, I guess. And so I don't get to try them like when they're new and hot, which is fine because I'm not trendy, but you know, I always like look at them and think I do want to try it eventually. What else? We're like crazy. This is nationwide, I know, but crazy desserts like those donuts or those shakes that are like a foot high, very Instagrammable.
It's like $18 for a milkshake, and you can get the entire candy store dumped into a glass.
Yeah, like I don't know how you would eat it, but it looks good in a picture.
The things that we know Connecticut or allegedly does well, but we can't verify, like lobsters and cheeseburgers.
Cheeseburgers, yeah. The steamed cheeseburger? Is that the thing?
I don't really know. I really like the aesthetic of like the seafood shacks with the faded signs.
Yeah, so, we're good at the seafood shack. I think the ambiance is such a big part of it too. Like even with the ice cream stands, I don't really eat much ice cream. I love yogurt, but I don't eat that much dairy, so I kind of like it's a special occasion thing. But so even though I might be getting sorbet or something, just the atmosphere of it is great. Like especially I like the ones where there's actual cows roaming in the background.
Do you have any particular ice cream shops? They're called ice cream stands, ice cream shops.
Yeah, I mean I differentiate in my mind, but I don't think most people do. Yeah, my favorites are Buttonwood Farm, which I think is a lot of people's favorite. Salem Valley Farms in Salem, Rich Farms in Oxford. I keep hearing really good things about the place in Newtown that I haven't been yet, but I intend to. I have this actually on my blog archives if anyone. I feel like anything that's outside where there's cows and it's homemade is going to be good.
For whatever reason, the ones that are on my list aren't right out in the farm. Maybe I just haven't been to enough. There was one up in one of the Granbys that I went to years ago that I liked, but I can't even remember the name of that. But I've long preferred like Shady Glen to Yukon Dairy because of a memory of going to a field trip at the dairy barn when I was, you know, in elementary school or something and having to wait a really long time and there being like flies in there and it being really hot. And this is like 35 years ago or something at this point. So like this should not taint anybody's opinion. And then by the time I got the ice cream I'd been waiting for, it was a little melted, so I've never gotten over that.
That's really funny.
So like Shady Glen doesn't is just like more kitschy diner, but I don't know, it's like ice creams I was introduced to early, that was the one that won out and is a favorite.
That's funny because it's so regional too, like everything Connecticut. Like I think it's hilarious that you went on a field trip to the Yukon Dairy Barn, but that's like not, I mean, why wouldn't you, you know?
Why wouldn't I? Well, we had a field trip previously to a farm just in town, but that was for kindergarten. It was a smaller trip and did not involve waiting for ice cream because kindergartners can't handle that kind of wait.
Right. We did the field trip to a farm. That's another trend, actually, I think. Not a new trend, but like the whole farm to table, farm market, farm fresh, farm everything, like that's just getting stronger like every day, I feel.
So I actually have Buttonwood might be a place I'm stopping today. We'll see.
Ooh,
I
have
to check to see if they're open because I'm having trouble with timing today. Grassroots Ice Cream in Granby, which I've mentioned before.
Yeah.
They describe themselves as wickedly creative. They've got like violet, sweet cream, salted licorice, and then like all the normal stuff, like crazy flavors, and they let you sample. So you don't have to commit to anything right away. The Farmer's Cow Cafe and Creamery, they've got this restaurant, cafe, whatever you want, but it's cafe with an L in it, like a calf.
Yeah, and it's like there's like a cow on the wall. It's cute.
Yeah, yeah, there's some cardboard, or not cardboard, but like plywood cutouts that you can pose with. That's up in Mansfield Center. It's coming from 6 local farms, and you can visit all of those farms. It's just not located at one of them.
Right. Actually, one thing I like about the Farmer's Cow Cafe that they'll do, this is like the most random thing, but they will make, I think any like drink that they sell, they'll make it into like an ice, like they'll blend it with ice. So you can just get a lemonade and like they'll blend it with ice and it's like a frozen lemonade.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I haven't actually been there in a while. So those are like my top choices. There's other places I'd like. They're just, they don't make their own. I think that the ice cream place in Old Weathersfield actually makes their own waffle cones. So you said pizza, New Haven pizza. Is that like all New Haven pizza or do you have a particular?
I like Bar because they do the red pies and I don't eat melted cheese.
Bar is the one that I've been to.
So good.
They have, it sounds wrong, and I know this sounds really wrong, but mashed potato pizza.
Yeah.
It sounds like it shouldn't happen, but that with garlic, and it's like the most amazing thing. I would eat any of their other pizzas if they were handed to me, but that's like my go-to now.
The other day, I just randomly remembered them and looked up and to see if they do takeout because I'm like turning into this boring thing about stuff I can't eat. But basically, I love baked goods of any kind, but if I eat too much wheat, I'll just like fall asleep for 3 days. So like if I go to New Haven, sit down and eat a pizza, I will not be able to drive home. But I was thinking, okay, if I could like go there and get it as takeout and bring it home, that's pizza worth sleeping 2 days straight for.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't think they do it. I think you have to go there and...
I mean, you can take what you don't eat with you.
That's true. You could like eat one slice and then, yeah. Right, they can't stop you. But
is that we've done the take it on the train and snack on the train home thing? Because it is a lot of pizza.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have allergies to anything, it's still like, it's quite a lot that they give you. Besides the New Haven pizza, I really like Blind Pig in Hartford. One pizza is like a mushroom garlic fontina combination. I mean, if you don't want to smell like garlic, you shouldn't get that. You'll reek of it. But I think like the more garlic, the better, especially if you're going to go outside and you need to keep the mosquitoes away. We talked about cheese.
It's so sad. Like I love cheese, but it's another thing that I can't have too often. But is it Cato Corner in Colchester makes amazing cheeses? And I know there are lots of others. That's the one that comes to mind.
Have you been on one of their tours? Or
no.
I'm curious about it, but I know you can... Like a lot of these places are open to come in and you get some kind of it's kind of like a wine tasting, a cheese tasting, I guess. Mystic Cheese.
Yeah, I was following them on Instagram and then I had to stop because I was like, no, stop tempting me with cheese.
You mentioned earlier when we were chatting before we recorded that you've noticed some like a trend in, not a good trend, but a trend in like coffee snobbery.
I have.
And we don't need to necessarily call anybody out, but like, what did you mean by that?
I've noticed as coffee shops spring up more and more, which is a great trend, there's like a lot more kind of anti-decaf sentiment. I think there's one, and I don't even remember which one it was, so I couldn't name it if I wanted to, that had like death before decaf or no decaf on their wall. And I've seen some like, if you drink black coffee, like blah blah blah, and it, you know, and I drink black coffee and I drink decaf, so and I keep thinking, you know, these people, some of them are going to hit 30 and not be able to have caffeine anymore, like what happened to me. And then they're going to have to really eat their words because, you know, if you truly love coffee, you'll keep drinking it, even if it's decaf. Like if you're all about the caffeine, then you could just like do Red Bull shots or something, right? Like why are you even drinking coffee? So yeah, I don't understand the coffee snobbery. I understand a little bit coffee snobbery in terms of wanting good quality coffee sometimes, mm-hmm. because yeah, it does taste better and you want that better taste and quality. But in terms of like judging other people's order, I find it really immature. There are other things that are, I know that are big trends that I just don't partake in, like beer and breweries. Like that's such a huge thing.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about this because I more recently have come to drink some beer, but I'm not. I drink the beer that I'm pretty sure, like the people who are judging those ordering decaf, they're probably judging those ordering these beers because they're like the wine coolers of beers or something. So on one hand, like I'm glad that we have this industry happening in Connecticut. Yeah, we've talked about the wineries have been doing quite well, but I don't think we've seen like the surge of them as the breweries.
No, I don't think it has. Well, I guess, actually, I don't know. Maybe it's harder to open a winery.
You need more space. You need to be able to grow the grapes, right?
Right. Now I'm really going to sound ignorant because the breweries, they're not claiming it's like Connecticut grown hops or whatever, right?
Right. I mean, maybe there probably is some. Someone out there's probably done their own hops, but for the most part, you really just need like a small warehouse is what it seems like.
It's like a lab or something. It's like big, like metal, I don't know.
They're pretty cool to look at.
Yeah.
To, you know, see what the process is. But, well, and they've turned into these hangouts. So one of the complaints that I hear in Hartford is, oh, we have no, there aren't nightclubs like there used to be. I'm like, well, our culture has shifted. Like, I don't think people are wanting to go out dancing when there's other alternatives. And one of those alternatives is going to breweries where it's more low key. You don't have to gyrate around. I mean, sometimes they have dance nights, but here's some music and you can chill in a corner or play some Jenga. Or it's an interesting way of not focusing entirely on the drink or not necessarily being surrounded by a sports ball on the TVs.
Yeah. I mean, that's anytime that there's like not sports ball, that's a good time.
Or just have that in a separate room, I feel like. Like, you can have that, but we don't need TVs all around us.
Right.
Having a conversation with someone who's just, like, looking over your head all the time. No. They might just be looking in their crotch at their phone. What do you think Connecticut should be doing in terms of food? Or, like, something that we have but we haven't, like, really owned?
I've noticed there's, like, a lot more healthy food, which is awesome. But the current definition of healthy food seems to consist entirely of nuts and seeds and legumes and droops and all those things that I and other people too are allergic to. So I feel like it's this ironic thing where half my life it was kind of hard to eat out because I was looking for like healthier options and less junk food. And now everything around me is healthy, but I'm allergic to all of it. So like maybe just a return to simpler food, like not the like 3 foot tall donuts and not, you know, a smoothie without like 10 kinds of nut milk in it. I don't know, a coffee drink that doesn't have like 20 ingredients and a beer that's not a cereal. Maybe that's the direction, simplicity.
I think we should also make a Venn diagram of our mutual allergies.
Yeah, so pathetic. See, really, I have to like live in a bubble.
So at least like if you can't simplify, label your items very clearly, please.
Another thing I think that we could do is like, I think we do a lot of things well. We just need to do them bigger. And I think that's hard in a small state. But thinking about farmers markets, we have a lot of them. But the few that are quite substantial, like Coventry, that is such a great asset to the state. And then we have, like, there's a little one near me on Wednesdays, and it's like 4 or 5 stands. And it's, I mean, that's nice that if that happens to be the produce that you need, and it's not even, I want to say, all produce. I feel like there's probably other things there too. And it just makes me kind of sad to look at it. I wish that we just had like more bigger, like I was listening to this thing on where we live about food trucks, and I guess it's really hard to get a permit for your food truck. I know that in New Haven they have that huge thing where there's a bunch of them, but I guess it would be good for people who like food trucks, and a lot of people do, if more cities had a critical mass of them, so it wasn't just chasing around one or two, but really having options. Because I think we have a lot. It's just that sometimes you get there and it's disappointing because of the scale of it. ¶¶
Speaking of scale, islands. Like, what even is an island? It's land surrounded by water, right? But, well, isn't everything an island at some point? And I looked up the definition and it's, you know, land surrounded by water that's smaller than a continent. And I'm like, okay, so is this going to be like a Pluto where right now Australia is considered a continent, but I don't know, they might get downgraded at some point. Like, and then I guess it's still, an island is still, that's not going to change anything. But,
well, I mean, at some point we're all going to be underwater, so it won't matter. But
I know.
But in terms of an island, like, do we count, you know, Manhattan or Long Island? Because I kind of don't in this sense.
So that was, you were like, have you been to any islands? I'm like, Long Island? And then I was looking that up, and I guess it's not considered an island. And I didn't get into why, because I knew that was going to throw me way off track.
Well, I think if you can drive there, it's not an island, like in my mind. Especially if you drive there on a regular road and not a bridge or something.
Okay. I think it's an isthmus.
Or something like that.
Yeah. So Manhattan is an island and I've been there, but it's, yeah, it doesn't quite feel like an island.
It's not the same. Yeah. When I think of an island, I think like when I was growing up, every year or most years we would go for a couple days every summer to either Block Island or Fire Island. And that's what I think of as an island. Like you take a boat to get there. It's kind of a little bit remote. Like
there's a process involved to getting to the
place.
Yeah,
and there's limitations there as far as what you can do, which contributes to that relaxing island vibe, which is notably different than just a coastal town on the mainland, even though some of the atmosphere might be very similar, right?
Right. So you were supposed to go on an island thing yesterday. What happened?
Island fail. It was raining really, really, really badly. And I think we still could have gone. Like, technically, the ferries were running, but we just decided not to because I can't think of any more miserable things in terms of, you know, day trips than, like, being soaking wet on an island just trying to protect your camera from the rain.
Yeah, I understand why you bagged that. So when this comes out, in case you're wondering about when this happened, yesterday also there was a tornado in Cape Cod that ripped apart some hotel. Yeah, so I was just wondering if that was going to interfere with
some
plans.
There were like roads in New London that were flooded so badly that people had to be rescued from their vehicles. It was raining, let's just say.
Yeah, weather's fun. So also Rhode Island is not an island, but it has a lot of water.
Rhode Island is not an island, but Block Island, Rhode Island is an island.
So you've been to Block Island.
Yeah.
I've not been to Block Island, Martha's Vineyard, basically any of the big preppy sounding places around here.
I have not been to Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket. Martha's Vineyard was another island fail, actually. I was supposed to go there after my high school graduation, and then we didn't go because my friend's mom, who said she could go, then said she couldn't go, so we just didn't go. And like, I've never been there.
Friend's mom,
ever
you're
since.
Terrible.
No, she's very sweet, but she has odd ideas about what her daughter was allowed to do at that time. Oh. I feel like I almost have no desire anymore to go to Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket because I've seen them so much on Instagram. And I don't want to get ahead of myself because we're going to talk about that kind of thing coming up. But I just feel like I've seen, and I'm sure that's not true, but I feel like, okay, I've like been there, done that. And I have never been there.
I've been to Campobello Island, which is
Canada, right?
It's Canada. And you have to take a more substantial bridge, or it feels more separated anyway, to get there. It looks like a nothing checkpoint, but that was the last time I went to Canada. There was such a hassle.
I drove there by mistake.
As it's, and you went to Lubeck. Yeah. So it's attached by bridge to Lubeck. And like half the island is one kind of a park or another. It's where FDR spent some of his summers. What I remember being struck by was how beautiful the flowers were. There were like wildflowers everywhere, which just across, you know, the bay or whatever. Not quite to that extent. So yeah, it had this different feel from what it was really close to.
I haven't even been to, I haven't even been on one of those Thimble Islands cruises.
Okay. So I have been on a Thimble Islands cruise, and that was just a few years ago. And I hadn't even heard about the Thimble Islands until a friend invited me down. She grew up in that area. And basically since she was a kid, she would go on a little boat cruise around there for her birthday. So one time, I don't know if it was a big birthday or whatever, she invited a bunch of us down to go on this cruise with her. And so I did a quick look up of this, and I see it's a, you know, big boat and everything. I'm like, okay, this is fine. This seems kind of interesting for a few hours. I go down there, and she's like, no, no, we're not at that boat. We're at this other boat. And it was very small. I think it seated about 8 people.
Yeah, I was going to say, 8 to 12 people. Like a little boat?
It was a little boat. I was pretty convinced I was going to die.
Well, it's not very far. The bonus of that boat for that excursion is it's the islands are like not far from the shore.
And it was totally fine for me to be on this boat, but I was not having it. So I wore my life jacket the whole time, but also they were, you know, we were making our own margaritas on the boat, which helped. And the guy, I guess, grew up on one of the islands, and he was talking about who he knew, like, you know, in this place or that place. So they have homes on some of the islands, and then he stopped off, and there was a, one of the islands is also a park.
Can you? Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, there was one. There was, I think there was only one where it was allowed. And it was a little overgrown, but, you know, it was, I don't know, it was a 15-minute stop off maybe. It wasn't that long. Got to explore a little bit. And so that was neat. But the ones where there are houses, we weren't able to go on.
Yeah.
But I think that was totally worth it and gorgeous if you have a, just absolutely worth it if you have a good day for it.
Yeah, you can also see some of them from the trolley trail in Brantford, which is like how I get my Thimble Islands experience. Just walk by and you can sort of see them out over there. And then there's Sheffield Island in Norwalk, which is, I believe, the one where they issue permits. And they don't let too many people go per year because it's like a protected environment. Okay. But that's supposed to be really cool as well. I tend to avoid things that, like, I can't sort of do spontaneously by myself. And that's one of those things, you know, like to get it together, to get the permit or to go on the tour and blah, blah, blah. It's not like wandering enough. But I do want to do both of those at some point.
Yeah, that is stressful, though, because there are so many things that I'm willing to do by myself. But getting into a boat is not one. I always have these urges, you know, a couple times a year to go and get in a canoe or something. But then I have to find other people to do it. I have been, so we might not necessarily think of this as an island, but in lakes. Lakes and ponds. So up in Bigelow Hollow State Park in Union, Connecticut, I've canoed around in there, and they have a few islands, and one even had a picnic table on it, and I thought that was neat. And it's a smaller kind of island, not as small as the ones that you imagine in the whole, like, stranded on a desert island scenario with the one palm tree that has the coconut hanging over your head that's threatening to drop down and kill you. What is it about islands that makes them attractive?
It's almost hard to pinpoint. Like, but I just know I have really good childhood memories of that, those like island vacations. Like, it was just very, very simple. It was kind of less, I mean, I guess this depends on your island, but it's like less, you know, the community that we went to on Fire Island was not one of the like vacation-y, touristy communities. It was just where my parents' friends happened to have this little tiny house. So there was like one store there. There were no cars. I mean, I guess there were cars for like officials working on the beach or whatever, but like, you know, you didn't bring your car on the ferry. So everyone kind of towed it around these little red wagons to carry like heavy things. And you could just walk, you know, from your little house right out to the beach. And it was just like a very unspoiled beach. It didn't have any of the amenities that the beach had in town where I grew up. And it just seemed like this very special, removed type of atmosphere. I guess it would be harder today because I'm sure that, you know, everyone just has their cell phone like everywhere else. Yeah. But like, I would say that's a good place to take your kids and like escape from all noise and stuff, because I definitely remember that well, just like a much simpler lifestyle. Yeah, I don't know. Block Island, like, I guess the geography too can be more striking with like the bluffs. Obviously not all islands are like that, but it's like something different. And the experience of getting there, of having to take a boat, it's almost like taking a plane, you know, it's like you're actually doing something a little more so than getting in your car and driving or taking a train, which like you might do every day. I guess if you commute by ferry, you're like, oh, not this again. But
I think it's interesting how people will go to these islands where you can't have a car and you have to use a moped or a bicycle or something to get around. and so willingly embrace that. But if you were to try to apply it to like a small town somewhere, there would be like, no, we need our cars. Like, but you did just fine, you That's know, true. In this setting.
Although I don't know how prevalent it is, but the golf cart community is kind of like a thing. Like I have been to at least one, like, and there were definitely cars, but like a lot of people get around by like little golf carts. So maybe that'll be the future.
Yeah. Well, and I think some of the mystique of the island comes from like reading and watching as kids all these like island adventures, the place where magical things happen, or there, you know, there's pirates or some kind of crazy monster or whatever, and having to survive, and which is not, you don't go on a survival quest in like no. Martha's Vineyard, I think, but right. I don't know. I haven't been there. Maybe that's exactly what happens.
I'm sure it's a survival quest, but it's probably more about like who's wearing the right brands,
right?
Who's taking the right Instagram,
making sure
picture.
You get on the ferry before it stops for the night. So there's actually two other ones I want to mention in Hartford. I call it the island, but it's not really an island. It's a sandbar that is north of the train trestle, and but it becomes an island occasionally. So I've said I'm going out to an island, and you can, it's not like it's easy to get to. You have to be like on a dirt path. So you're either biking or walking at that point for a while. There's a path that's been made over to it.
Grows in with poison ivy. So it becomes an island with the tide?
Well, with like, with flooding and the tide.
Can
so,
you get stranded on it?
Yeah, so that almost happened recently. It was, I wouldn't have been stranded, but I forgot that the Connecticut River is a tidal river.
It is.
Up to about Hartford. And wouldn't you know, it's not something I actually think about, except that I was on this island for a couple hours and was able to, like, most of it is surrounded by water. But if you go up far north enough, there's a place where you can cut over. And I did that, and it was totally fine. And then coming back, I'm noticing that the part to get back was much narrower. And I was like, I wonder how much longer I would have had to wait for this to get surrounded. It's sand. It's not, like, nice sand, but it's sand. And there's shells and driftwood and then, like, a lot of other garbage that washes downriver. But it's an interesting view to have of the city. And the other island is one that doesn't exist anymore, that is only from, that I've seen on old maps in Bushnell Park, where right in downtown Hartford, from where the river would come through and kind of where there's, like, where the pond is now in Bushnell Park, in that general area, there had been a little island out there. And someone brought this up with me recently, how, you know, he likes to think about someone playing like Huck Finn out on this island back in the day and like kind of running away, you know, because it wouldn't have been that difficult to get out there. A real flimsy raft would have probably done the trick. We've talked about this just a little bit before. Our mutual irritation with influencers, which I guess we should explain for those listening who don't have any idea what that means.
Are there people who are lucky enough to not know?
Yeah, I think there's a few. Like, I don't think my parents know what an Instagram is, so they wouldn't know.
Okay.
But I don't think they listen to this either. So I guess when we talk about the influencers, we're talking about not necessarily like just whoever goes on Instagram to take pictures of their, you know, vacations, but specifically people who are paid or making some kind of money off of like their image that they've made for themselves.
Yeah, I would say basically people who are creating advertisements, but they are not working for an ad agency or a PR agency or in-house for a company or brand. They're an individual who is being paid to create that ad content because they have enough followers or enough of the right type of followers that a company or a brand feels that reaching their followers is worth their money.
So you have this magical combination of like maybe some narcissism with a profit motive and often not much education about what they are taking pictures of. What are some of the effects that we've seen of like the influencers on Instagram and Facebook?
So one thing that I think we both noticed just recently is there have been a new little spate of stories about attractions that have been forced to either close down or drastically change their practices due to being overrun by people on foot and in cars and general chaos breaking out. So there was a sunflower field, I think, in Canada, and a daffodil field, I think, in California, that had to just close down to the public because too many people were coming and just like literally ruining everything and creating really unsafe conditions. There was an episode of On Point, NPR radio show recently, partially about how Jackson, Wyoming has started this campaign encouraging visitors there to not geotag their photos with specific locations, but instead to tag like Jackson or Wyoming a little more broad, so it doesn't encourage more visitors to flock to trails, a lot of which might not be official trails, and going there might be dangerous either for themselves or harmful to wildlife or the environment there. So there's kind of becoming this, as more and more people get outside into the wilderness and take photos of gorgeous places, and more people see that and want to emulate that, there's this also on the other side kind of a backlash against people doing that, that certain people don't belong in these places, whether that's because they have no respect for the environment, or they are using it for commercial purposes, or they're just the wrong kind of people, depending on, you know, who's angry about it.
Mm. So there's a Leave No Trace principles. Now there's like a group that sort of, I don't want to say owns that, because they totally don't, but you can find them on Instagram, Leave No Trace. And it's, if you were a Boy Scout or, you know, have spent a lot of time in state parks, national parks, you've seen these principles like posted around. There's nothing new about these except that they are being a little bit more prolific on social media to kind of point out and like educate people about them. So just like very briefly, things like plan ahead and prepare. So just, you know, mapping where you're going to go, know if an area is super congested at a certain time of year and don't go there. Travel and camp on durable surfaces, so staying on established paths or staying on ground cover that's not fragile, which, you know, if you're not super educated about, you might not always realize, but sometimes, you know, there's a reason why you see signs that say, like, keep off dunes, right?
Right, or stay on the trail.
Yeah, stay on the trail, dispose of waste properly, so that usually means taking it out with you. And with packing it out, it also means, and so this will be gross for a minute, but like if you're out in the woods and you are going to the bathroom out there, you're expected to actually take toilet paper and tampons and things out with you. And if you're not willing to do that, at least bury them like 6 to 8 inches. I mentioned that only because I have encountered occasionally things left out in the open that really ought to be at least buried.
And I think that, I mean, all of those sound like perfectly reasonable, like, right. like basic outdoors education.
It should be reasonable.
Principles.
Yeah. But I think that when you have, and I mean, there's a few more I'm going to name, but I think that when you have people who get ideas from social media, I'm going to do this, but they don't have that background, they don't necessarily know to stay on a trail, because
yeah.
they'll say, well, why not? I can get a better picture off this way. And things like leaving what you find and, you know, respecting wildlife, which is a problem that we're seeing, is like, well, your picture of you with a bird on your hand is going to get a ton of hits. Obviously, you're going to get lots of likes for that. And you're seeing like bad behavior that way. People are like, well, they're friendly. Why shouldn't I have a squirrel on my head? Because it's a wild animal.
Right. I think a lot of people don't quite understand that when something is looks like it's there for them with a, you know, ranger station and an entry fee and trails, like they have a bit of a hard time understanding that the wild is the wild and it can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Like those people who fall in the pools at Yellowstone and get boiled alive yeah. all the time. Like they just don't understand that they, like, yes, the government is allowing you to go and do something that could get yourself killed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, in this, there are two related but distinct problems that kind of get conflated. And
right.
one is like over tourism and bad behavior by yeah. tourists who don't necessarily understand. I mean, to give them the benefit of, right, of the doubt, right, in the best way. They just don't know how to behave in certain situations because they've never learned, because we all learned at some point, you know, and if you don't, then you don't. And then on the other, like, overlapping side is influencers who probably are not camping in there. They're probably like helicoptering or driving in there for like 5 minutes to take a picture and get out.
Right.
And
that was actually one of the things with the, I think the super bloom in California, there were, right, there was like a case of somebody taking a helicopter in to get a picture.
Well, you see, like, I mean, if crazy. You are like me and watch, you know, makeup videos on YouTube in the background for noise because you don't have a TV, like, you see the people get taken on trips by like top makeup brands, and they get, and part of the trip is like they get flown into the Grand Canyon to take a picture wearing, you know, 6-inch heels and a fancy dress and like holding a perfume, and then they fly out. So that's one problem, and it causes all sorts of issues. And then the other problem is that, you know, everyone wants to go to the most well-known parks. And mm-hmm. so they get more tourists than they were built to handle. And the parks are sort of dealing with like the waste and the overcrowding. Whereas like other parks that are just as spectacular but not famous don't get tourists. And so it's like a yeah. question of balance. And that happens in cities too. And, yeah. you know,
that,
like,
happens just on a state level. If yeah. you listen, I mean, one of my latest pet peeves has been when the news says like, oh, you know, Hammonasset is closed now, but they're not, it's not really closed. It's like, or Hammonasset's full. And what they mean is the parking lot is full, which is still a ton of people. And I don't know that I would want to go there if that's the condition, but why is it full? Because people only know about Hammonasset and Rocky Neck and like, you know, a couple others. And there's all of these other great alternatives that if you're, you know, if it's just like a state park kind of a day and you're not going for the most awe-inspiring view necessarily, you can get something similar somewhere else.
Yeah, they should actually, they should announce in those tweets when they say it's full to capacity, they should give alternatives.
Right, absolutely.
Like nearby parks, you know. Right.
Well, and something I'm looking into is like Battersea Park in Farmington. It's like the Farmington, West Hartford, New Britain area, but it's owned by Hartford. And it doesn't appear to be operating this season. It's like closed. Hmm. And I'm like, that's a sandy, it's a lake, you know, it's a pond, it's a lake, whatever. But it's sandy and it's a perfectly nice swimming hole that's 20 minutes outside of the city. So people could go there instead of going all the way down to Hammonasset or even down to Middletown to Wadsworth Falls. Right.
I wonder why it's closed.
I wonder.
I guess there's no Instagrammers in there.
There's a story about that. But yeah, having, you know, information about like the Connecticut Coastal Guide, which I love, that shows you the coastal access. And there are a lot of land trusts in Connecticut that you have to do a little bit more work often to find them because you're not going to get signs guiding you from the road, but you can get the coordinates online and track them down. So like the Joshua Land Trust, Avalonia yeah. Land Preserve, Land Trust, whatever they call themselves. These are beautiful sites.
Right. And that goes back to like a whole other side of Instagrammers ruining things is that, you know, my whole thing is off the beaten path travel mm-hmm. and it always has been. And that's the tagline of my blog and on. But I can see how on Instagram, the algorithm rewards conformity. So I know that if I go to a place that is super popular and I take a picture that 10,000 people have taken before and I post it, I will get 10 times more likes than if I post a picture of an equally beautiful place that's been, you know, maybe three other people have posted a photo of it or something. And when, you know, I never started looking at Instagram like a business until I relaunched the blog and started an account to accompany that. And now that I pay attention to it, you really see how sameness yeah. is rewarded with likes and comments, and likes and comments are money. So you, like, I hate seeing the same photo over and over and over, but I can also understand why some people do it. And that's another aspect that I haven't seen anyone mention in terms of like the coverage of people destroying the nature
yeah.
phenomenon.
So there is an Instagram account called Public Lands Hate You, which is like, I don't want to say the flip side to the Leave No Trace people. They're coming from the same place, and they've actually added like one additional like leave no trace principle, like, which is share responsibly, like share your trips and everything on Instagram responsibly. And for them, that means, and the Public Lands Hate You is a little bit controversial and edgy, and we'll talk about why in a minute, but basically what they're saying is like, don't geotag, provide captions that are meaningful, so that, I guess, just to clarify how a picture was taken, that if you don't see a path in the picture, that you're explaining that you stayed on a path, or say something so there's substance to it, I guess, is what it comes down to. And why they're controversial is they've actually done some shaming, which I kind of like. I don't know if rhetorically it's the best thing, but I enjoy that they have called out some people who have been on Instagram who've done really absurd things, like picking rare flowers to pose with and stuff like that. So others have said, you know, you're being bullies, which I'm like, that's not bullying. Come on, let's not use that word for everything. They're offering a critique, and they're taking from, you know, public Instagram accounts, and they're going for the worst. They're not like being that picky about stuff, but they also explain why something is a problem. They've pointed out stuff like those rock cairns, the rock piles that people like to make, and they're like, they were intended originally to serve as directions. So if you're making a lot of these as decoration, they don't serve their purpose as a map, basically. But also you disturb microorganisms and stuff by moving rocks around, which is like maybe not the most compelling thing, but yeah, it's like stuff that people don't think about. So they've gotten some pushback, and I think we saw the same article. There was something in High Country News that was critiquing this stuff, saying that it's a kind of gatekeeping.
Oh, I think I read, well, unless it was the same one.
And
I
that
think
was
I
kind
read
of racist.
A different one making the same point. Because I read it on melaninbasecamp.com. And it was, yeah, it was making that point that it was called Why You Should Keep Geotagging. I guess, you know, responding directly to this sort of no geotag concept slash movement. Yeah, and it was saying that the geotagging, not geotagging, is gatekeeping, and often in a racist way, and saying that the outdoors is for certain people, but not other people. I mean, just the phrase "public lands hate you" is like a little obnoxious, because like you're the public, we're all the public,
exactly. You
know? And that was one point in this article, at least, about how they are native lands, of course, but now that the U.S. government has designated them as public lands, they should be for everyone,
right?
And so to say that certain types of people don't belong, you know, it gets quickly into racist territory.
Yeah. And so I was like, I was going back and forth on that, because on one hand, I understand that the point about how it can seem like gatekeeping. And I think the person was really, you know, lashing out about the Public Lands Hate You account and saying that it was like, oh, you just don't like how brown and black people are using the land. But I was going through their Instagram, and basically it looked like almost every person that they were calling out was white.
Yeah, well, I have to say, when I think of the stereotype of like that people are calling out of the Instagrammer who's like being a bore in nature, it's like a very stereotypical kind of young, attractive, rich, white influencer.
Yeah.
Who's clueless and probably has like spelling mistakes in their caption. And,
you know, I think maybe someone took it very personally, or maybe saw one picture and didn't look at the context, which is that mostly that's not what was happening.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that exists. Like, I'm sure that people have experiences in person in the wilderness where they're treated as like not belonging.
I understand the problem in general. And here's where I differ on it, is that I think we need to make sure that we're not having over tourism, but also that we're being more accessible to certain populations with our parks, whether they're national parks, state parks, whatever. And an example is, you know, recently I was trying to figure out, can you from Hartford easily get to Hammonasset or Rocky Neck or Wadsworth Falls State Park using public transportation? And the answer is like, no. Like, there, you can get there, but it takes, oh my gosh, I can't think of what it was offhand, but, you know, if it's 45 minutes to drive somewhere, we're talking more than three times that to take a bus there. And that's often walking long distances where there's not sidewalks. And then you get there and you're there for like maybe an hour, and then you have to get on the next bus home because there's like not enough. And I'm like, that's where I see the racism and the classism very, very strongly, at least in Connecticut, is that we don't make our state parks and even some of our town parks more accessible to a broader base of people in that way.
Right.
So in that said, I'm like, yeah, I don't think we should be geotagging down to a very specific coordinate in a natural area.
And I think it depends who you are, too. Yeah. I mean, if I geotag a specific place, I always get excited when I go someplace and no one else has geotagged it
right.
yet. I'm like, yeah, now I'm really... But, like, it's hard to do that yourself without doing it through Facebook, and I'm not going to get into that. Uh-huh. So,
yeah.
So then I end up not geotagging it anyway. But I think it's, like, one thing to say... that if you are working for a major corporation, if you have millions of followers and you're working for a major corporation and they want you to take a photo of like in a certain place, it's up to like you and that corporation to like consider being responsible in how you present that image. But I think for regular people, like,
yeah.
you're not going to cause, like, the destruction of the super bloom if you're, like, right. just some regular person.
Well, and an easy workaround to that is you use either no geotag or a more broad geotag, and then in your comment area, in the caption, then maybe you put in more information about it. Because most people, you know, the ones that I worry about are the ones who are just clicking on the geotag and finding something like, okay, let's go, versus mm-hmm. having to think a little bit more about an image.
It's hard to ask people to read captions because I think a lot of people don't.
And people really don't read things. And so something else that has come out of this has been tourism pledges. So besides these principles, some tourism pledges that are, I'm interested to get your response. Like there's a Big Sur pledge, which basically says things like share our coastal roads in a safe manner and be mindful of the impact of my actions. Which sounds nice, but kind of vague. Like, what does that mean?
How is it used? Like, do you have to sign something when you go?
I guess you just take, like, I think it's like a virtual pledge to do that. I don't know.
Is it just like a sign on the
right. Do people billboard? Follow pledges? I don't know. And then there was one from Palo, which I think I'm saying wrong, but Palo pledge, which is like, don't collect marine life souvenirs and don't drag fins over coral when swimming. I'm like, oh, that's what you mean by respect something. Here's a very specific behavior. But I still wonder, like, you know, if you take a pledge, just like you pledge to recycle everything that, you know, comes into your house, or you pledge not to use plastic during July, like what happens to that pledge? Is that just like, you know, you make a mistake early on and then you just like, oh, the heck with this?
Yeah, I don't know. You should do that stuff because it's the right thing to do anyway. And you, like we were saying with education, that, you know, kids should be taught those things. And that's a whole big complicated issue. But like, I don't know, I'm skeptical on the yeah. pledges.
What are other things that people could do since we're sort of like, maybe geotagging is okay if you aren't the influencer with like 1,000, you know, 10,000 followers, 100,000 followers. And, you know, just sticking with those like normal guidelines of like just respect things, but like some other stuff to think about. You don't have to necessarily go off of paths to get a good picture if that's what you want. Like
no.
you can go being off the beaten path. I mean, you know, it's not an expression. You're staying on a path, but here's the secret is that pavement means people, right? So the closer you are to a parking lot, the more people you're going to have. You're going to have a more unique shot. If you go, like, if you're a quarter mile out from something a little bit less convenient, you don't have to even do anything that is infringing on nature. You just have to be willing to walk a little bit further or roll or, you know, what have you.
Yeah, there's statistics about, like, what percentage of people in national parks ever get more than, like, 15 feet off a trail, and it's vanishingly small. Another thing you can do, going back to off-the-beaten-path travel in general, is off-season travel. Mm-hmm. Because it's one thing to go to, you know, I think Barcelona recently instituted some kind of method of like capping tourists because they're just getting too many. And I don't know that much about Barcelona, but I would assume that most of those people are coming in summer. I would assume that that permit system is more lenient in like the coldest month they have. But, you know, for all I know, it's still like really beautiful there, and you get to experience a lot of sights like with far fewer people in your pictures. So that's one way to do it. Yeah.
The Barcelona backlash against the over-tourism is wild. If anyone wants some fun reading, we'll put something up in the show notes about that.
We'll link like all these things that we're referring to also.
But the Grand Canyon, I saw some statistics. It's like 2.2 million people visit the Grand Canyon between June and August. And then like during winter, which I'm not sure they weren't that specific about it, but like about less than 1 million visited during winter. Same park. So it seems obviously like go, first of all, why, you know, I understand why people go. It's because it's easier for a lot of people to get the time off, but who wants to be like sucking down the fumes of cars in front of you at that level anyway?
Yeah. Right? That's what I just think is like, I look at people in crowds like that and I just think you have no idea how much more fun you could be having mm-hmm. if you were someplace that was not famous, even if it wasn't all to yourself, you just had room to like actually appreciate the view. And not be looking at like 500 people's heads. Yeah. I don't get it myself, but I do get the pressure to publish content that like mm-hmm. people think they want to see, and they think they want to see it because they don't know that like there's other options. So it's yeah. like it's a cycle of society is terrible and I want to live in a hole.
Right.
In conclusion.
In the meantime, we have places posting, please don't trample our tulips signs and some, you know, promotion of the other national parks like Indiana Sand Dunes, like maybe go here instead of the Grand Canyon this time.
Yeah.
And there is something else that I'll post in the show notes, a picture I saw of just all these people lined up with their cameras and phones, all like looking through their phones basically to take a picture of Old Faithful. Besides the environmental destruction that is happening on different levels and the sameness that's happening, and I know like influencers are like, if you're in it for the money, you're in it for the money, but the question is like, if you're just going someplace to get the shot, like are you even experiencing anything there? Like
absolutely. And like one thing, like we're talking about the Grand Canyon, so one thing that I thought was funny the first time I went to the Southwest a few years ago was when you're driving in between, like I went to Arches National Park, which and it was November, so it was like pretty empty, and it was like absolutely stunning, you know. And I went to Monument Valley, and I just driving through like those areas, one thing that never clicked in my head before I went there in person was that you leave the national park and you're driving, you know, several hundred miles to get to like another national park or whatever, or another famous vista. It's not as if the scenery in between becomes like really boring. Mm-hmm. Like it's the same friggin' scenery. It's just that some governmental body has put up a certain type of protection and like certain types of rules in some places, not in others. You can still get like that, whatever landscape you're looking for, you know, whether it's like the red rocks or the rugged New England coast or whatever it is, like you can still get that outside of a famous destination. I was just reading about some lighthouse in Canada that like is really famous and everyone goes there just to take the picture, and it's like in this cute picturesque town, but there's like 50 other picturesque towns like right nearby in that same province and nobody goes to them. Mm-hmm. Like that's always true. It's always true. So just be a more discerning traveler.
If you have thoughts on this, we'd love to hear from you, because we could be totally wrong on this, but
yeah, if you have anything we've talked about, if you have thoughts on Connecticut food, thoughts on islands, thoughts on Instagram.
Yeah, people have thoughts on ice cream and pizza, really. I know that. Yeah. So I want to know which places we didn't name that we need to put on our own lists. There are a few Patreon supporters who we would like to thank. Allison, Anthony, Benjamin, Brian, Constanza, HS, Margo Lynn, Mary, Matthew, Nancy, and Steve.
Your support helps Going Steady keep going steady. Thank you.
You can now listen to Going Steady on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and the Apple Podcasts app.
If you'd like to rate or review us over there, that would be a great help. You can also subscribe to Going Steady and receive notifications by email. Sign up at goingsteadyct.com. That's goingsteadyct.com. Comments, suggestions for future episodes, hit us up at goingsteadyct.com. ¶¶